isn't it crazy that it started in a garden? I would say I have a black thumb, but I can get things to grow. They just don't flower. We've got these great little plants that Sarah bought for some occasion. And once the flowers left, you know, I'm keeping them alive, but they're just not flowering. Yeah, I was going to make some flowers. But it all happened in a garden. It was in a garden where God would have Adam. And Adam, it says, walked with God in the cool of the day. He communed with God in the garden. But it was in the garden that Adam sinned. And the Lord had to remove him from the garden, lest he eat from the tree of life and would live forever in that fallen state of sin. And so he removed Adam. And it's in a garden that we see the last Adam retreat to a garden to be filled with the Spirit, to speak to his Father as he presses forward to the cross. It's back at the garden. This garden is not the Garden of Eden. This is the Garden of Gethsemane, which means wine press or crushing. And we're going to see Jesus here in the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They show the agony that we see. We call it the passion. And there he agonized, and he would ask his three amigos, could you not pray for an hour? And they kept falling asleep. And going through agony, we see that he would actually sweat drops of blood. It would be in that garden that he would say, Father, if this cup could pass, I mean, but not my will, thy will be done. Basically, if there's any other way for you to reach Alex, Lord, other than me dying, I'm open. But I am willing to lay my life down for that guy because I love him. I love the world. But John does not portray the agony in the garden. John does not portray the sweat of blood, does not portray Jesus crying out to the Father, there's another way. John remains that Jesus is God. And we see power come in the garden here in chapter 18 of the book of John. We see Jesus have power, but we see Jesus as God. We see him as a leader. That's one of the things that we've been going through with the men's group is leadership. God has called the men to lead their families, lead their communities. And as I look at chapter 18, just the first part, we're not going to go through all of it, maybe the first 11 verses, we see Jesus leading, not shrieking back. It's easy sometimes when you see the difficult thing to look for plan B. Anybody, you know, but not Jesus. His face is like flint and he heads for the cross. I like what one of the pastors said at Richard's memorial. He said, holiness is more than being moral. It also includes relational. My vertical relationship with God must transcend to my horizontal relationship with mankind. And what we're going to see Jesus, who's got this beautiful relationship with the Father, the secret of his ability to lead is his relationship with his Father. And that's so too with us. Our capacity to lead, our capacity to be the mother or the father or the neighbor that we are will always be dependent upon our relationship with God. And we see that Jesus, because this is right, we see him cover those around him. We see Jesus making sure that everything is in order. His house, if you would be in order. Jesus, we see him doing just that, taking care of those. And so here we see chapter 18, verse 1. It just says, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went out from his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden which he and his disciples entered. The brook Kidron is the same brook that King David would cross as he was fleeing from his son Absalom. When Absalom raised up a coup, if you would, and a bunch of these people were against David, Absalom won the hearts of the people, and he was coming into town. And David, to spare the city of needless bloodshed, to spare a division, a civil war in Israel, David did the incredible and left. He didn't flee and retreat because he was afraid. He wanted to preserve the city. He wanted to preserve the people. Jesus is crossing the brook, not fleeing. He was pursuing the cross. Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Like I said, it's the crushing Gethsemane. Jesus knew what was ahead of him, and so he spent time in prayer. He showed us that there are tough situations, and we can't shrink back from the tough situations. A good leader looks at what needs to be done and makes the decision. And sometimes it's hard to decide how I'm going to do this, but we have to move ahead. We can't just hide behind the skirt of those behind us. We need to press on. And as we pursue those things that God has called us to, we need to recognize that we need to be in prayer. Just as Jeff was saying, we need to be in the Word. We need to be seeking the Spirit at those times when we gather as a body. We were reading Acts chapter 2, and it says they all were together in one accord. And I would say that we're here, we're all going to be in one accord. But the word all, I think there's something special when the church shows up. Was it not amazing how we packed out the Mayflower Church? I mean, the church showed up. And there was something amazing when the church shows up. And we need to show up. And here he says, if you show up, I'm going to show up. If you seek me, you'll find me. And so Jesus crosses the brook to go and to retreat, not away from the problem, to press into the situation, regaining strength, gaining power. And Judas, verse 2, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. That the Kidron Valley goes down, and on the east side, after you cross the brook, it goes up to what we would call the Mount of Olives. And when we were in Israel, we spent some time there. And there are some olive trees that are at least 1,000, possibly 2,000 years old. I don't know if I didn't see any carving Jesus was here, but they were huge olive trees. And it was just a privilege to stand there in these trees that are older than our country, that are just so old. And it was just amazing that this is the place. This could be the tree that maybe Peter was crashed out against, or where Jesus had knelt, or maybe this is where the Olivet Discourse was taught from. When Jesus would talk about end times, he would talk about wars and rumors of wars, and how the sun and the moon would stop shining. And well, we're not in Matthew, we're in John. But it's an amazing discourse. It's great. Judas knew that place. He knew that he knew the Lord's schedule. He knew what he would be doing. And so that's where he went. In verse 3, and Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with, here it is, lanterns and torches and weapons, oh my. Not just with lanterns, but lanterns and torches. Not just with lanterns and torches, but with lanterns and torches and weapons. He received a detachment. The word is spira. It has a variety of definitions. It could be something rolled up in a ball. It could be something folded together. Basically, it's a group of stuff just all kind of put together, paper clipped together. It's set apart. But it could be a cohort, or it could be one of the definitions, it's a tenth of a legion. That'd be 600 men. And we don't know what definition John was using, whether 600 men came with them, because it could also mean any band, any company, any detachment of soldier. It depends on the context of the statement. And we're really not sure if there were 600 men, but there were a lot of them. And they came with lanterns and torches and weapons. They came prepared and they came with purpose. They came not only to find Jesus, but to bind Jesus. They thought that they can manipulate, coerce, empower this Prince of Peace. They would come with weapons, and the lantern, it says, is a candle that is encased with like a clay pot with holes to give light, but yet the wind wouldn't blow it out. But they also had open torches that were dipped in oil, and they're searching. They thought that Jesus would be hiding. They thought Jesus would be, you know, incognito, but not my Jesus. We're going to see that he stands straight up and says, "Who are you looking for?" They came to find him. And isn't it interesting? They came so prepared for violence. Jesus says, "If you seek me," we talked about it, "you'll find me. I am so available for you." They want to do him harm. They came at night because their deeds were evil. They came with torchlight to extinguish the true light. They thought they could manipulate the man, forgetting he was God. Forgetting that Jesus would say, "No one takes my life, but I lay it down on my own accord. My own accord I lay it down. I have the authority or the power to do that." I find it interesting the use of violence to capture the Prince of Peace. And I say that just because right now I see demonstrations of violence in the name of peace in our country. And it breaks my heart to see people doing things. And a lot of this stuff is even in the name of the Lord. And we serve the Prince of Peace. Let's be Christians. Jesus taught us what it looked like. He would say, "Love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you." Christians need to rise above that type of action. Jesus commanded us to love. So here, these guys thought that Jesus would be hiding. Here, they thought that they would need to look under every leaf, every bush, looking for Jesus. And it says in verse 4, "Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, 'Whom are you seeking?'" Isn't that great? "Who are you looking for?" They said, "Jesus of Nazareth." He said, "I am." Your Bible might say, "I am he," and that "he" is in italics. That means it's not there. He basically just said, "I am." And he used a covenant name. But I like that. He just said, "Who are you seeking?" I put together 7 questions that cause me to respond, that Jesus asks, causes you to respond and ask yourself. And I wanted just to go over these because I think we have to ask these questions. Jesus asked Peter in Matthew 16, "Who do you say that I am?" That question everyone has to come to. Every person has to determine who they say Jesus is. And it's been so eloquently said that he's either a liar, a lunatic, or he's Lord. Someone say, "Oh, he's a liar. He's not really God. He lied about everything." But so many prophecies were fulfilled through the man. You can't call him a liar. Well, then he was a lunatic. And everyone just kind of patronized him and went along with it. Well, that makes us the liar. Or he's Lord. He said in a crowd, "Who touched me?" As a woman that had this issue, she said, "If I can just touch him, I've been to the doctor, I've spent all my savings, if I can just touch him, I know I can be healed." And those are questions that we have to ask. Are we willing to do what it takes to grab a hold of him? Jesus at one time said, "Peter, step out of the boat and come on." I've been out in the ocean before, and I've never stepped out of a boat. "Who touched me?" Here's one. He's asked the woman, the Samaritan woman, "Will you give me a drink?" That's an interesting question because the division between the Jews and the Samaritans is worse than the pro-lifers and the pro-choicers. The division is worse than the right and the left. We're not naming any parties today, but we can say right and left, can't we? The division's so bad that the Jews wouldn't even walk through Samaria. They would take the long way home. That's okay. I brought a sack lunch. I'll spend 2 extra days just so I don't have to run into a Samaritan. If a Samaritan's shadow fell upon a Jew, they were considered unclean. Yeah. Talk about the Hatfields and the McCoys. And what did he say? He says, will you give me a drink? Will you cross the social stigma and take care of me if I ask you? Right now, it's so unpopular to believe in Jesus, or it's unpopular to talk about certain topics. And Jesus says, are you willing truly to cut through all of that and cut through the social stuff to meet with me? And I have to ask myself, am I willing to do that? Lay those things aside, because really, only one thing's going to save this country. Only one person, and that's Jesus. I like what he said to the man there at the pool of Bethesda. Do you want to get well? Interesting question. I mean, you and I would think, well, of course he does. Why is he there? He wants to jump in and the water's stirred and da-da-da-da. He's clean and healed. But you know what? The man's been there for years and years and years, and he couldn't get to the well. By that time, he's crippled. And everyone kept pushing him aside. Anyone ever felt like, I just can't get there? There's always somebody younger. There's always somebody taller. There's always somebody there with longer hair. I can't get to the well. I can't get to the pool. But Jesus says, I didn't ask you that. Do you want to be made well? The man was comfortable in his infirmity. My wife was born with club feet, and so she has one of those little handicap stickers, or not stickers. It's a little thing you put in your mirror. We call that placard. And so when she's not feeling good, she throws that, and she parks right up front. And she should. Well, when it's expired, it goes in my car. So when she's with me and she's not feeling good, I'll park right up there, and I've been tempted to blot out the expired day, but I haven't. Truly, I haven't. But I'll tell you what, there's been times when I don't feel good, and there's not a spot open. They're packed, and there's 20 spots for handicap. And I'm thinking, well, one won't matter. But I'm not going to park there. I was given brand new hips. I'm not handicapped. God healed me. And the question is, do you want to be made well? I can't tell you how many people I've talked to in abusive relationships who won't do anything about it. And the question is, do you want to be made well? Do you want change in your life? Are you willing to cross the line to get that? And Jesus asks that question. Jesus asked Martha, after her brother died, after waiting for Jesus, who delayed it, says, do you believe? I guess that's maybe the real question, isn't it? Do you believe? Because if you don't believe, nothing else really matters, does it? But do you believe? And then here he asks an interesting question. Whom do you seek? You get the call at 10 o'clock at night, 11 in the morning. Who do you seek? Are you seeking the Lord? Are you seeking God at that point? Or are you freaked out and calling everybody? I tell you what, I call for help all the time. And the Lord was speaking to me. I was looking at these things. Dave, who do you seek? Who's your salvation? He didn't say, what are you seeking? He said, who are you seeking? And then finally, the last question that really, really struck me is in John 21 when Jesus looks at Peter. And he has to ask him 3 times for him to really understand what he's saying. He says, Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? I think when we stop and just look at these questions, it causes us really to think about our relationship. Part of my only job here is to help foster and develop a deeper relationship with God and you guys. My job isn't to do anything else. And I do that through Bible study, through praying with you and meeting with you guys. But my because Because if I can develop and teach and groom a way for your walk with the Lord to deepen, guess what? It's not dependent upon me anymore. Because the King of Glory is now leading and teaching. The King of Glory is healing and working in your life. And that's my biggest desire. That's what John says. What brings his best joy is when he sees his children walking in truth. When I see you developing and walking in the word, when I hear Jeff say, man, I didn't have hope for the future, but today I do. I say, yes. Yes, Lord. You're reaching people. Do you love me? The answer is yes. And so he asked this Spira, he asked this cohort of men, whom do you seek? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And he says, I am, ego ami, the Greek equivalent to Yahweh, the covenant name of God. And you don't see Jesus showing him, see, I'm God. Look at the blood that I was sweating. I'm God. Look at the miracles. He simply said, I am. And what's the word say? Verse 6, now when he said to them, I am, they drew back and fell to the ground. When you see the reaction of the name of God, people fall down. I love that song, there's power in the name of Jesus. There's power in the name of Jesus. And whether they just passed out or whether they fell down because they were amazed or they were afraid, the thing is their natural body didn't know what to do in the presence of the Almighty, so it just said, down. Down. And sometimes that's just what happens when we are in the presence of the Lord. I just find myself on my face, prostrate before him. Lord, I am nothing. And these unbelieving military guys who came to manipulate the situation are out. How many times have you gone to the bank and they'll say, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Our computers are down. You're like, well, lift them back up. I need some money. Write it out. Do the old-fashioned way and use an abacus. You know? Get me the cash. These guys, I mean, these were soldiers. And they fell down. Jesus says, if you seek me, you'll find me. And there they found more than they bargained for. They found Jesus. It's interesting that they didn't recognize him. Isn't that interesting? I mean, here comes this army, and one says, hey, who do you seek? And Jesus of Nazareth. As if they don't know who they're talking to. I mean, so much so that there needed to be a special sign. You remember what the sign was? That kiss, that betrayal. Isn't it interesting if you look in the word here, that the word for kiss that was used, it's phileo. He was showing him brotherly love. What I think is interesting, because in John, when John 21, when it says, Peter, do you love me? He says, Peter, do you agape me? And Peter says, Lord, you know I phileo you. So he asks him again, Peter, do you love me? And he goes, Lord, you know I phileo you. And then finally, he gets down to our level and he says, I'll take what you got. Peter, do you phileo me? And Peter cries, that lump, Lord, you know I phileo you. I've tried to say I tried to be this man. I tried to say I will never deny you. I blew it. I can't make that commitment. And Jesus says, well, what can you commit to? I phileo you. I'll take it. Feed my sheep. We so many times we think we have to give him, we have to commit this huge thing. Look at this. We're going to see Peter here doing the same thing. Pulls out his sword and he's wagging this sword around and hitting people in the ears. We don't have to fight the Lord's battle. I like what Jesus says right here. He says in verse 8, Jesus says, I've told you I am. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way. What a good leader. The buck stops right here. Collins, in his book, Good to Great, says that a good leader knows windows and mirrors. If there's praise to be given an organization, the leader looks out a window to give the praise to someone else. But if there's a problem, the leader looks in the mirror and finds the problem within himself. And so Jesus says, the buck stops right here. I'm the leader. Let them go. I like that about my Lord. I like that he's got me covered. He won't let me fall. He's there. Unto him who will keep you from stumbling, Jude tells us. He's got us. And it's almost like, oh, we can close up the book right here. What a great place to stop. The Lord has got it all under control. Verse 10 says, and Simon Peter, having his sword, drew it out and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. And the servant's name was Malchus. Thanks for narking Peter off, John. None of the synoptic gospels mention any names. Doesn't say it's Peter. I think Peter and John had this thing, you know. They ran to the tomb, and John's quick to say, the one that Jesus loved, you know, he beat the other guy. I mean, John is such a competitive guy. And he was Peter with the sword, and he cut off Malchus's ear, his right ear. Do you think that there's significance? I mean, this is God's word. Do you think it's significant that he said he cuts off his right ear? This is what I was taught. It's no one knows. God knows. Peter knows. John knew. If he was left-handed, they would have said he's left-handed, but we don't see that. So he's right-handed. And so let's just say here's Malchus right here, and he's coming after Jesus, and I'm going to save Jesus. And so I pull out my sword, and I'm going to cut off his right ear. So this is my right hand. I draw my sword. Well, his right ear would be here. See that? So for me to cut off his right ear, I'm taking off his head. I'm severing his shoulder. There's almost no way for a man moving toward me for me to swing and cut off his ear. Unless, here's Peter. Here's Malchus facing the other direction, maybe going the opposite way. Here's Peter. Swings, and the momentum would hit it. As he's walking away, he would miss his shoulder and miss his head. Peter could very well have hit Malchus as he was walking away. What does that mean for you and for me? So many times we can talk about someone who's not there. He just stabbed him in the back, didn't he? And I think there's a phrase that talks about zeal without knowledge. Wanting to do something heroic and yet not in the spirit of the Lord. I mean, doesn't the proverb say that the wrath of man does not produce the will of God? And here he is, flaying a sword and cutting off an ear. And so for me, I have to stop and say, I need to be careful with my words or my actions, that I don't cut someone's ear off, or even worse, swing at them when they're going the opposite direction. Look at the response that Jesus says, and I find this significant here. In John, he says, put your sword into its sheath. The cup of my Father has been given to me. Shall I not drink it? Put that thing away. Am I not going to go through what Dad already told me to? Jesus is obedient even through the hard stuff. I like that. I like it when someone I'm following goes through the hard stuff without wavering, just, I'm doing it. We're going through this. He's obedient. In Matthew, the same scenario, Jesus says, put your sword into its place, for those who live by the sword die by the sword. Do you think I cannot pray to my Father and it will give me more than 12 legions of angels? Now, earlier we said that sparrow was a tenth of a legion. And now Jesus says, don't you think that I could have gotten 12 legions if I wanted to? We don't have to fight God's battles for him. We don't. He's got it under control. He always did. God's not wringing his hands going, oh man, I hope someone shows up Saturday morning to help Pastor Dave do food for the homeless people. No, he's got it under control. He fulfilled his calling. And in Luke, Jesus stops and says, permit this. Here, Peter cuts off the ear, and the other soldiers come up with their swords and their spears, and Jesus says, hey, let me do this one thing. And it says he picks up the guy's ear, and he heals it. Now, of all the things that Jesus did, that, I think, was pretty outrageous because that guy was his enemy. That guy was there to take him to jail. Jesus took time to take care of those around him, even if that guy was against him. The ends don't justify the means. He does the right things, but he does them right. And I think as I look at chapter 18, I see Jesus really displaying power. I don't see the agony of the garden. I see Jesus being our champion and leading, standing in front, taking care of his disciples, taking care of even a wounded man that's not even his. I think of the Good Samaritan, again, crossing the road and taking care of those that don't necessarily agree. And so I see five things that I can take personally, that I can move forward on, and I'd like you to write them down. The first one is we need to move forward in faith and not backwards. We need to move forward in our faith. I don't know where you are today in your faith with God, but could you maybe commit yourself that tomorrow or next week that you're going to grow? I've encouraged you guys to get one of those year Bibles. I've said that, what, once a Sunday, twice a Sunday? Yeah, I've made sure. So I know some people have got them. That's great. My question is, are you reading it? Are you reading it? Let's move forward in our faith and not backwards. Take time away with the Lord and pray, be filled with the Spirit. You know, cross that Kidron Brook, that cross that place that would you can find a quiet place. I have a quiet place in the morning that I go to and I just seek the Lord and I pray. The third one is resist and rise above abusive means. If you have to raise your voice, you've lost. I used to sell real estate. I love selling real estate. It's one of the reasons why I don't sell it right now. In negotiating, I've learned that the first one that shows emotion loses. And that's true in anything. Well, not like love and all that, but when you're dialoguing and maybe you have a slight disagreement. Sometimes husbands and wives have slight disagreements. But the first one that shows emotion, frustration, and all I said was, well, you lost. And you're going to sleep on the couch. So deal with it. So let's rise up and let's resist abusive means. Watch your words. Don't cut someone's ear off because you hit them in the back. And then ask yourself, number four, whom do you seek in difficult times? We've been experiencing difficult times. Where do you run? Some of us run to food. Sometimes when my plate gets full, I've told you before, what I do is I tuck everybody into bed and I watch TV until 4 in the morning and just kind of zone out. That's what I do. The Lord says, shame on you. Some of us run to friends, and that's great. But let's not forget the Lord, because the Lord knows. And then lastly, what I want to just remind you, what Jesus would tell Peter is, you don't need to fight his battles. Just answer his call. We had this phone that wouldn't stop ringing a couple nights ago. And we're praying, and it rang. Sorry, I'll turn it off. Rang, sorry. We're not mentioning any names. We're not just talking about a phone. My phone rings sometimes, but it's funny. Answer his call. Answer the Lord's call. I was sharing with the men a couple nights ago, and I said, what's the last thing the Lord's asked you to do? And have you done it? Just stop and think about that. What's the last thing he asked you to do? I used to ask my son that. What's the last thing I asked you to do? Did you do it? If I have to ask you, obviously you haven't done it. Ask, Lord, I want to deepen my relationship with you. And so a lot of times, here's the deal. I'll just tell you right now. We'll say, Lord, I want a new, fresh relationship with you. So let's start right now. And he says, okay, let's finish the things I asked you to do. And we're like, no, I don't want to do that. And he goes, but I do. I want you to finish that. I noticed that in certain groups of people, some people are more prone to depression than other people are. And do you know what's one of the most leading causes of depression? Everyone listens. What? Unfinished projects. There's an unfinished project, and you'll say, oh, that's just, you're just saying that. No, I'm not. I read it on the internet, so it's got to be true. No, seriously. What happens is this circular thing goes on. You start it, you don't complete it. You look at it, and, oh, it's not done. Things are stacked on it. Now you feel bad. Now, not only is the project not done, I'm such a bad person because I haven't done it. And it goes on and on and on and on. And all we have to do is say, okay, Lord, I know that that you're working on me. Help me just to simply hear your voice and complete that thing. And so as we're looking, you don't need to fight God's battles for him. Just simply answer this call. And look back at what he's asked you to do and do it. And listen for that still small voice as he leads you into a deeper walk with him. Because we mature really through obedience. We mature through obedience. You know, with kids, you give Trinity just a couple more years and she'll be taller than I am. Physically, all it is time. Spiritually, it's obedience. That's the only way we mature spiritually. So with that, let's go ahead and pray.